Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalypse Podcast. I am Steve. He is
Larry.
How's today that for a dramatic pause, everyone?
We are Steve and Larry. It's Steve and Larry. It's almost like a form of ice cream.
Just sit back, ease the chair back, just prepare to just...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there's room for Rusty. You remember we'll pull up the little easy chair by the fire and the rocking chair.
Oh, yeah. Most of our audience has never had to enjoy the friendly giant because they weren't sick.
Yeah, you had to be home ill for the friendly giant.
Yeah, there you were, a 15-year-old boy, not knowing what to do with yourself in the 80s and 70s, 70s and 80s, right? What did you do? You watched the friendly giant, Mr. Dress-Up.
And I actually had a tape called Saturday Morning that did the theme songs for all the Saturday morning cartoons we watched. Yeah. Did Spider-Man, and that's the only one I remember, actually.
Those are good songs.
Oh, yeah, and the remember the theme for, I don't know if you're probably too young to remember Hercules. Get Herc!
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Raise a mighty cheer to the mighty Hercules. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
It was always the same. He had three villains, and he always chased the same three villains away all the time.
Huh. You think, yeah. Like, come on, Hercules, like, get it together. Like, you know, come on.
Yeah, and for some reason, I thought his girlfriend was Helen of Troy. But yeah, that would probably work, eh? Helena was his girlfriend. But anyway, we should probably do something scriptural.
So, folks, we're back in Ezra. And, buddy, we're going to pick up Ezra 2 and 3 this week.
Yes, yeah. Mainly because, 2, you're not going to – it's one of the very few times that we won't read right through the whole chapter.
Yeah.
And there might be an advantage for the people – our mighty throng of listeners to read this, the whole genealogy.
Yeah.
But I think genealogies, they work if you read them enough that you start remembering them in other places. But
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a big long list of names here. So
yeah. Yeah. So folks, go ahead, Larry.
No, these are all the people coming from from Persia, going back to the land.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll hear us read a little section at the start of chapter 2, a little section at the end of chapter 2. And yeah. Larry will make sense of it to us as we go through here. So let's start at chapter 2, verse 1. Now these are the people of the province who came from the captivity of the exiles, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had taken captive to Babylon. They returned to Jerusalem and Judah, each to their own town, in the company of a lot of different guys that I can't pronounce their names.
yeah. And that's that. So we'll just start there. So, by the way, you're coming through with a bit of background noise.
Oh,
almost a bit of an echo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just don't want it to land on our recording.
So I'll turn down my mic a little bit there.
Okay. So Zerubbabel is the first one to lead them through, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, you know, Mordecai and Nehemiah and a bunch of other people as well. And then all that they do is they start listing the names. And so first there's the men of Israel, and then they're going to talk about the men of Bethlehem. And now if you scroll down, you know, then you've got some of the priests in here and some of the Levites and the gatekeepers of the temple. They actually mention these guys. And you keep on going, right? And then when you get around 62,
right, there you go.
He will tell you. Now in 62, let's go 64. The whole company numbered 42,000, besides their 7,000 slaves, and their 200 male and female singers. I don't know why. I don't know why they get, you know, separate notice. There's the people who come, then there's the slaves, and then there's the singers.
Yeah. We're not saying these are the useless artisans of the community. We're just singling them out.
Yeah. And they don't name them, so it's not AC/DC and, you know.
Yeah.
And Rush. And 736 horses. And 245 mules and 435 camels, and 6,000 donkeys, 6,700 donkeys.
Yeah.
Because donkeys were really important to the Jewish people. Remember, that was the oddity of the donkey, is that their kings rode on donkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, my. Many, many off-color jokes are coming to my mind about about donkeys riding donkeys and such things. But
they came in on donkeys because they wanted to be humble too, right? So it was a symbol of humility too, right?
I don't know. I've heard that, and I'm not sure. When Jesus rode into town on the donkey, right, and people laid palm branches and stuff, he was very clearly saying to them, "I am the king." But I'm not sure if it had to do with humility or not.
Okay.
I said that once in one of my sermons. They didn't ride great war horses. They came in on donkeys, and that showed their humility. And my teacher at the time said that I was wrong, completely wrong. Of course, he was wrong about some other stuff he said to me later on, but bugger. And he was an English guy. He was the one who said, and then the Shebers came out and ate the boys that made fun of Elijah or Elisha. Can't remember, never remember which. I think it was Elijah.
Yeah.
They called him old Baldy or something, and he said Shebers came out, and I actually said, "Sir, what are Shebers?" And then I found out that was the English way of saying female bears. Shebers. So the big thing that you want to know is that Zerubbabel was the first one to come, right? And about 42,000 people came. And I don't know if this is the whole period of time that 42,000 or 42,000 actually came as Zerubbabel. Because he mentions Nehemiah, I don't know if that's the Nehemiah from 60 years later or if that's the Nehemiah from earlier or if they came in different groups. And I think when I took this in university, I think there's some confusion over exactly, how many. And other ones, by the way, there's a place in Nehemiah where it talks about 30-something thousand coming. In 2nd Esdras, it talks about 35 or 37,000 coming. But I think for us, the important thing is, a little less than 50,000 people returned from the Babylonian captivity. Mm-hmm. And, there were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in that Babylonian captivity.
Mm-hmm.
But about 50 came back to the land.
Hmm.
And then it says, and when they arrived, you're reading 68. Yep. 68.
I'll pick it up there, folks. So verse 68 of chapter 2, when they arrived at the house of the Lord in Jerusalem, some of the heads of the families gave freewill offerings toward the rebuilding of the house of God on its site. According to their ability, they gave to the treasury for this work 61,000 derricks of gold, 5,000 minas of silver, and 100 priestly garments. The priests, the Levites, the musicians, the gatekeepers, and the temple servants settled in their own towns along with some of the other people. And the rest of the Israelites settled in their towns.
Yeah, so they started settling in. And this is where, before we did this book, we did Haggai. And remember Haggai, his big thing was telling the people, stop building your own house. Start getting to work on the temple, right? And it's in around the 520-ish that they did the temple. Sometimes we say 450, but it's in around the 500.
Okay.
That they rebuilt it. So now we're into chapter 3.
Yep. All right. Chapter 3, starting at verse 1, folks. When the seventh month came and the Israelites had settled in their towns, the people assembled together as one in Jerusalem. Then Joshua, son of Zadok, and his fellow priest Zerubbabel, son of that guy, and his associates began to build the altar of God to sacrifice burnt offerings on it, in accordance to what had been written in the law of Moses, the man of God. Despite their fear of the peoples around them, they built an altar on its foundation and sacrificed burnt offerings on it to the Lord, both the morning and evening sacrifices. Then, in accordance with what was written, they celebrated the Festival of Tabernacles with the required number of burnt offerings prescribed for each day. After that, they presented the regular burnt offerings, the new moon sacrifices, and the sacrifices for all the appointed sacred festivals of the Lord, as well as those who brought freewill offerings to the Lord. On the first day of the seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings to the Lord. Though the foundation of the Lord's temple had not yet been laid.
Yeah, so he gives you just an inkling that that they weren't getting their act together on building the temple. But they did do the altar right away. And remember, the thing in Ezra, too, is they're going to say Ezra, you know, found this book of the law. But you know from here, they already had it. They already had Moses' writings, and they were following them in their sacrificial thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they built an altar and they started doing the sacrifice. So they did the right stuff, but the criticism was that that they weren't building the temple. Now here, notice that they were having a little trouble with the people around them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I often think that the people around them were talking about actually Jewish people that had and Israelites that had intermarried and stayed in the land. And these are the ones that are giving them trouble. So it could be outsiders that remember Babylon, their thing was you scatter the people everywhere and you move people all around so that people become Babylonian.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than maintaining whatever traditions they had. Mm-hmm. And then Persia would have just continued with that.
Yeah.
So that's what was going on. Remember I told you that last week we said that the guy that I was listening to, the Jewish guy that was talking about this, said actually they were supposed to bring everybody in and they didn't. Mm. Now this suggests that they were actually having trouble with the people around them.
Right.
So then after Haggai got after them, they rebuilt the temple. And this is the rebuilding of the temple.
Okay, so picking up at verse 7 now, folks. Whoops, skipped too far. Then they gave money to the masons and the carpenters and gave food and drink and olive oil to the people of Sidon and Tyre so that they would bring cedar logs by sea from Lebanon to Joppa, as authorized by Cyrus, king of Persia.
And so these are the cedars of Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because they talked about them being great, big, beautiful cedar trees that they used for a lot of this stuff. And cedar is a beautiful smelling wood. It's an oily wood that you could use in boat building and stuff as well.
Right,
I think.
Right.
Right. And they talk about them using it. Now do notice that they hired carpenters. And I like that because if you've ever been a part of a church that's got the church people together to build something, it's a hideous experience. You got all these guys that have no idea how to build, and they're good-hearted people just getting in the way of all of us that are trying to build stuff, right? And I'm a crappy builder too, but at least I grew up with builders, so I can't do it, but I at least know what it should look like. So anyway, I do like that they hired people from these places to help them build the temple.
Yeah. That's fantastic. At verse 8 now, folks, in the second month of the second year after their arrival at the house of God in Jerusalem, Zerubbabel and his son, or Zerubbabel, son of that guy, Joshua, son of Zadok, Zadok.
Jozadak.
Anyway, I'll get it soon. Right? And the rest of the people, the priests and the Levites, and all who had returned from the captivity to Jerusalem began the work. They appointed Levites 20 years old and older to supervise the building of the house of the Lord. Joshua and his sons and brothers, and Kadmiel and his sons, descendants of Hodavdia? Close enough.
It's sort of like Godiva, but it's Hodiva.
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 And the sons of Henadad and their sons and brothers, all the Levites joined together in supervising those working on the house of God.
Now, I do want to say just a little piece here. Mm-hmm. Notice that they're talking about the Levites and the priests returned and helped them build this. And there's some controversy over this. Because they've been in Babylon, so if it's 520 and they went in 580, you know, 585, 586, so you're 60 years, right? Mm-hmm. That they've been in captivity. Some might have come a little later, but But there's a real feeling that the whole idea of the priesthood kind of went by the wayside during the captivity.
Oh, okay.
And so the coming back, I guess they maybe took time and tried to do genealogies to figure out who the actual Levites were. And maybe people remembered that they were Levites. Mm. But there's a little bit more flow in the whole priesthood at this point in time than there was, right? At the time. So it's kind of an interesting thing that Ezra's talking as if it was a very clear idea of who the Levites and the priests were.
Okay.
Right. But there's a lot of stuff going on here. You know, people are just coming back. Remember, we think that probably the rise of the rabbi and the rise of the synagogue was all during the Babylonian captivity.
Okay.
So you didn't have a temple priesthood for that period of time.
Hmm.
So I don't know if people came and went, no, I'm a priest, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it all came together.
Yeah.
But he seemed to think that it was okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Verse 10 now. When the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests in their vestments and with trumpets and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals, took their places to praise the Lord, as prescribed by David, king of Israel. With praise and thanksgiving to God, or with praise and thanksgiving, they sang to God, "He is good. His love toward Israel endures forever." And all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord, because the foundations of the house of the Lord were laid. But many of the older priests and Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud when they saw the foundation of this temple being laid, while many others shouted for joy. No one could distinguish the sounds of joy from the sound of weeping, because the people made so much noise, and that sound was heard far away.
Yeah, and this is a beautiful piece. And also there's a little suggestion here that the families of the priests kind of hung in through the captivity and did come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it may be not too bad. But they said some of these old people, the older priests that remembered the temple. So they would have remembered the temple. Like, these guys would have to be in their 80s.
Yeah.
The ones that remembered. So it was a lot of older people that remembered. It's kind of an interesting thing. And he said those that remembered the first temple remember they had porpoise skins and they had badger stuff and they had gold everywhere and mm-hmm. they had, you know. And I'm not even sure, like, because where were the stuff from the Holy of Holies in mm-hmm. the middle there, you know, before Harrison Ford found them later on. Because by that time they were in some big warehouse in the United States. Oh no, the Germans had.
The Germans had it,
right. Yeah. Eventually they ended up in a warehouse in the United States. But a lot of that stuff would have been missing. And of course, they didn't have the gold to put on the outside of the temple. So this temple may have been a similar size to the original temple, but didn't have all the adorning pieces. The adornments, is that a word, adornments?
I think so. If not, we're accepting it, yes.
Yeah, that and that's why they were saying there was such a ruckus when that whole thing was built that you couldn't tell the weeping from the cheering. And the people that had never seen the temple were thrilled and they were cheering, and those that had seen the original temple were very upset with the piece of crap that they built for God. And it's kind of an intriguing thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's almost go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, but is this the same temple that the disciples then say to Jesus, you know, look at this magnificent temple, or is that a different one?
By then, Herod has been working on the temple again, and it's still part of the second temple, but Herod for sure has been rebuilding it and making it really quite a bit nicer.
Okay.
But, you know, in the courtyard and stuff, that's still where they were doing the marketing that Jesus got so upset about.
Okay.
Yeah, and all of those pieces were part of Herod's temple. But that's still Second Temple period, because Second Temple period ends when Herod's temple is destroyed in AD 70.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know, like I've not studied all of the iterations of the temple, okay. But I think this temple, whether it might have been built up again over the years, but then you see everything falls apart again, because, you know, right now Persia's letting the Jewish people be there. But over the, now you're talking hundreds of years, you know, Alexander the Great's going to come along, and then you've got the Seleucid period and the Ptolemies are a part of it, you know, and then you're into the Roman period and Herod the Great. So I don't know how many changes this temple had.
Okay.
But this one wasn't as nice as the first one, even though the carpenters would have been quite displeased that, that people were so upset.
Yeah.
He did all that good work, you know. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. And now they've rebuilt the temple, you're, and the Jewish people are back in the land. You're still in the 500s. As actually Ezra is going to come by about 50 years after this, is Ezra's piece of supporting the temple. But I used to have this idea that they had no law of Moses at all. And that when Ezra came, he found it and he reestablished it. But what he actually found was probably a Hebrew version in the runes, and utilized that, because this version, these versions were probably in Aramaic. Aramaic would have been the Babylonian language.
Yeah.
And then oddly enough, Hebrew would be reestablished later on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing, because whenever I think of Hebrew, I always think that would be the earliest and the best. But probably during the captivities, you know, everybody's learning Babylonian, they're learning Aramaic. And the Jewish people in the first century, they spoke Greek and Aramaic were the main languages that they spoke, right?
Okay.
So Hebrew would have been almost like Latin became in England and other places. Where scripture was in Latin, and it was a kind of a weird thing to switch it over to English. So language, man, nothing's as clean cut as you want it to be.
Yeah. So, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize the connection between Aramaic and Babylonian, that was the Babylonian language, and then here it is persisting all the way, you know, well into the first century. So.
Yeah, and that's why, like during the intertestamental period, a lot of people still spoke Aramaic. That would have been the language of the people, the construction language. But by the first century, Greek was the New Testament was written in what they called Koine Greek, which oddly enough, people thought was a very special Greek. They thought some of the early scholars thought it was like a Holy Spirit Greek that they spoke. And then they found out, oh no, it's actually hard hat. It's construction language.
Yeah.
It's the language of the people who are in those days less educated. It's the language of the common people. Koine, common language.
Yeah.
And it's still, I need to spend a little more time, because it's kind of weird to think that they spoke Aramaic in the first century, because there's a lot of stuff that's gone on between over the centuries, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if Babylon was, you know, 585,
right,
and Persia takes over in 520, you know, so it's kind of intriguing, isn't it, when you think about all
that? Yeah. All these things that have persisted throughout the, and yet that forms some of the language that we get later on in the New Testament. You know, we get these Jesus words in Aramaic and things like that. Yeah.
Little tiny pieces in Aramaic. Most of it's Greek. There's a couple of little pieces in Aramaic, suggesting that they spoke that as well.
Yeah.
Also, there's a strong feeling that the people in the first century in around Jerusalem were trilingual, that they spoke Aramaic and Greek, and then they spoke a little bit of Hebrew if they were doing biblical studies along the way as well. So, and they would have learned that in their synagogue schools.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those of us in countries where, you know, we're basically one language, you know, Canada, United States, unless you live close to Quebec where you actually do speak two languages, most of us are monolingual, speak language, you know, you can't think of these people as stupid.
No.
You know, there's always that feeling that the people back then were stupid, and it's kind of a bad way to be thinking.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. But anyway, so they got there, and according to Ezra here, they got that temple rebuilt. Some were happy, some were sad, but that temple was there.
Yeah.
And Nehemiah is going to come along, you know, in 40 years, now 50 years, and he's going to start reestablishing the walls of Jerusalem. And those walls, as far as I know, I don't know if they fell and were rebuilt a few times, but those are the walls that you have in the New Testament with the different gates. Remember the dung gate, the fish gate, and all the different gates.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, fascinating. Well, thanks, buddy. That, you know, what a great setting up again at the table, right? Like we keep setting it up as for the next book and the next chapter that's coming on. So Larry, thanks for painting that picture for us of these folks that are, you know, finally obeying what God has called them to do. And like Larry said, they knew the law, because why else would they be doing the sacrifices? But yeah, here we go, right? Oh, I wonder if they're like anybody else we know in history, like today, like us.
like all of us that kind of lean toward where the world is.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a university, you're leaning in hard.
Ouch, that hurts. But yeah, folks, I hope you got that sense out of it that, you know, again, God is saying, what is your first love? Is your first love yourself, your home, your family, your possessions? Is your first love me? That's just another way that God was asking his people and indirectly asking us, what is your first love?
Yeah, and I'd have been a lot more comfortable if you hadn't finished that way, Stephen. I know Lynn's first love is God and Lauren's is, but I question mine sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, mine too, buddy. At least by the way I live, I sometimes don't live that way for sure. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us. As you know, Larry and I love doing this for you. We're so thankful that you listen. I know I promised you that I would give you an email just to send stuff to, but I haven't bothered to set it up yet. Sorry. Not lazy. I'm kind of lazy. But anyway, let's leave it at that. And I'll do it soon. Right.
You were thinking that we might answer questions or something, eh?
I'll get on that. And due course. And just to let you know, we've got like probably one, I think we got one more week, and then I'm away for 2 weeks in a row. So okay. So we'll take a little break when I'm away, but other than that, we'll be here next week for sure. So until then, I was Steve, he was Larry, and this was the Avant Garde Podcast.